Last week's article about the rumored shuttering of Konami's games division, called a reshuffle, was an interesting one, especially in the face of their ongoing Pocky Slot and Bimani series, and Pro Evolution Soccer staying power, I suppose. Calling all keyboard enthusiasts, get those MIDI keyboards out of storage and play nostalgia if you live in Japan or otherwise know what you're doing. This has been your Bimani News Update for February 2021. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, to bring you more on this and the rest of the week's gaming news, starting right now on the show where every gamer has a voice.
Back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio. And Bimani updates are always welcome here, just for the record, because that is, of course, where the show has its roots, where myself, Dark Sakura, and Loki got our start playing Dance Dance Revolution at the local arcade many, many years ago, about 20 years ago at this point. Anyway, hi. Welcome. I'm Rob Roberts, and it's episode number 855 of our show for this February the 7th of 2021. Not joining me tonight, unfortunately, Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers. She has the night off. She was feeling a little bit under the weather, so she'll be in a pre-recorded segment a little later on, but we will not be hearing from her live, sadly. But she'll be here with us next week. But who is joining us live tonight is our good old pal Loki, who I think's been having a very busy week. Hi, Loki.
Yeah, it's been busy.
I keep seeing your Twitter, and you're like, I'm giving myself crunch day. I'm taking a day off of work to work on Friday.
And I did, and Saturday, and pretty much most of today.
Wow. So yeah, and I didn't realize until kind of the middle of the week that you and Aaron, or YYR, were really committed to the February 10th release date for Pixel Poops, which, you know, we've been hyping up for the last few weeks on this show. For whatever reason, this is your first Orange Lounge Radio. This long-running gag here on the show are these dream games. Like, we'll throw out this crazy idea and be like, that should be a game. And, well, one of them became a game on the PlayStation Vita. It's called Pixel Poops. And, yes, you go to the little taco stand and eat tacos, and then you stop joggers from running through the park by... Well, it's in the title. This game came out on the Vita. Aaron or YYR did it. Obviously, you can't get it anymore because they kind of closed that part of the Vita shop down. But he's now re-realizing Pixel Poops through a Steam release, which is coming out in just a few days, like three more days. So by the time some of you hear this, it will already be out. But he didn't just decide to release Pixel Poops. Oh, no. He decided he was going to do a Commodore 64 version of the game as well as releasing sound samples, souping up the game with some extra modes that are very reminiscent of, like, the game Switch on an Atari 2600. As silly as the idea sounds, and as much as when I say Pixel Poops and you probably go, that sounds stupid. Yeah, but it's fun. Like, a lot of old video. Like, have you ever looked at Atari 2600 box art? It's pretty stupid. And I mean that with love.
A lot of the games are, like, weird. Like, I mean, look at the premise of, like, it's Pac-Man. You're a thing that eats dots and getting chased by ghosts
exactly.
For some reason.
It's like, exactly.
What's the story there? I don't know. There is no story.
Exactly. So, and then not only this, so not only is Aaron got all this going on and takes all this on, but then Loki's like, you know what? I want to sign up for Punishment too. I'm going to do an NES version of Pixel Poops. And you know what? I guess we'll just release it all on the same day because it's going to be free on Steam. So Pixel Poops, the base game, is free on Steam. So you can go check that out because you can actually, I think you can play it on Aaron's website anyway. I think it's been there the whole time. So you can play it for free there and you can play it for free on Steam. But then there's going to be like DLC that's going to cost $2.99? It's going to cost less than a fucking latte, okay? It's going to be cheap, and you can go buy it, and that's going to give you the Commodore 64 version, the soundtrack, and, or I shouldn't say soundtrack, but the authentic sample pack and all that stuff, and Loki's game, Pixel Poops number 2, which he's crunching this weekend because he hasn't finished.
Yeah. So Pixel Poops number 2 will be a separate piece of DLC.
Okay. Separate. I'm sorry.
It's not included in the $5.
Oh, my bad.
So that is separate.
Still, I think $5. That's nothing.
Yeah, I think for my game, I was going to charge right now, like, I was going to do $8. But, I mean, we've got, like, 32 levels in it. Well, it's going to have, like, at least 40 levels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty hard. And, you know, I've redone, you know, a lot of the... I'm still drawing stuff for it right now. So there's a lot of content in there. Because I wanted it to be on par with, like, I was looking at, like, okay, like, what are some of these other puzzle action games? You know, how many levels do they have? Oh, 50? Okay, well, we'll see if we can get up to 50. But, you know, it's probably going to be 40, because I have 5 worlds, and each one has 8 levels. So it's probably going to be there, unless I decide to cram in a few more levels, which I still could.
I just love that you're releasing a game on, what, Wednesday, and it's still not done.
Well, technically, it doesn't need to be done even when it comes to Wednesday, because we do live in that modern age where we can patch stuff. But, like, yeah, it'll be done by then.
All right. Going to our chat room, because, of course, we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. And Fifth Dream is asking, any news on the physical? Because do what? Well, I'm going to help answer that. First, Loki needs to finish the game. Then he can worry about the physical version.
No. Yeah, so the physical version will be coming at some point. So, like, what I want to do with that, I may end up doing, because, like I said, there's a lot of stuff I wanted to do, but time, you know, may not be necessarily on my side to do all the things I want to do. So what we may end up doing is, like, releasing a finished version of the game on Wednesday, and then coming back to do, like, a special edition that will be the physical version and will be a free upgrade to be a DLC,
cute.
Whatever.
Okay.
So that may be what I end up doing, because I still want to see if there's... I've got a lot of space in different... because the way it's banked in there, the way the memory's split up, I have a lot of space in there, and I want to cram more music and stuff like that in there, and more levels as well. And my kids keep asking me for, like, boss fights and stuff. So I had some silly ideas regarding that. So I want to cram all that stuff in there as well, if possible.
Okay.
To really, like, maximize everything. So then that way, you know, we'll just, you know, charge the $8 initially. And then if we bump it, the special edition will be $10 total. So if you bought in at the $8 version, then you get the special edition for free type thing.
Yeah.
So that's the initial idea I have. We'll see. I mean, we may just leave it at $8 and call it a day.
Well, I do like this. SSJ100 Matt in chat says, Loki already more transparent than CD Projekt Red about the process. So... At least you.
Yes, I understand. It's called scope creep. I am very familiar with scope creep, and that is the whole reason I did it on the NES, because I can't implement a lot of the stuff I would like to implement on it, because it just physically can't be done, because it's, you know, limited in space and what the engine can handle and stuff like that. So that was on purpose, because, and it worked, because I'm about to finish something. So that was the intent, but we'll see. Yeah.
So I was looking in chat, and there was a little bit of discussion about the price, and, you know, set it at $10 and then just have it go on sale a lot. Cause, you know, sales, you know, and honestly, like I was going to say, I think when I was on YYR site this week, he actually said that the price of a couple of his games are going to go up this month. And honestly, my reaction was good. You deserve it. Like you guys, well, YYR specifically,
yeah,
in this case,
you know,
deserves a bigger cut. Like these games are great. And it's unfortunate that, you know, there's just so many games on Steam that you have to have that viral moment to really get discovered sometimes.
I may end up doing $10. I $7.99 or whatever. Because I was looking at like other games. I'm like, well, my game, it's not as good as that, you know? So I was like, no, people are going to pay $10 for this. So I may just end up doing $10 and then we'll just do the free upgrade later. We'll see. I don't know. But
you need to go on other podcasts to promote, by the way. You should be booking a bunch of podcasts this month.
Well, I don't have time yet to advertise, and that's probably a big mistake. But I do want to, like, definitely get it out there, because just the premise of a game and an NES game and stuff like that, I think that should be able to get some clickbait articles on some sites.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see if I can put together, like, something like that.
Well, you had that YouTube that was like, you're not going to believe this second
one,
game.
Dude. But, yeah. I mean,
but still,
nice.
It shows that, yeah, you know, there's people that think it's so weird in a good way that they want to highlight it. So
yeah, so far we've got, was it, we've got the park level, we've got a cemetery levels, snowy mountains, and then like sort of a Western theme. So that's what we've got done so far. And now I'm working on, it's a inside of the Nintendo type level. So it's all circuit boards and stuff. So that's what I'm working on artwork for right now. And that's just going to be like an amalgamation of all the different things in the game. But yeah, it's going to get pretty hard. And I was telling...
The original's pretty difficult. But by the way, I did play... So not to get too far into my gaming week, but oops. I did play some Pixel Poops the other night just because, you know, it's a fun little game to sit down and play for a little bit. And I broke Aaron's score. So I have the number one score right now in the default mode, basically. I have the number one score. And the only reason it didn't get higher... I was trying to go in and screenshot when I hit 666 because, you know, LOL. And then, of course, I was so focused on getting the screenshot at 666. When did I lose? 667. So that's the current high score in the world for Pixel Poops. So,
and basically once I do have the game done, like I am still looking at physical like versions of that. I don't know how I want to do that yet, if that involves like a Kickstarter. And then with Kickstarter, it's like, okay, well, what do I actually need to fund? Because, you know, how much is going to go to Kickstarter, then taxes and costs, and you got to make something off of it. So, you know, it's all of that stuff involved. I don't know, because I've never run a Kickstarter, so who knows?
That's a interesting thing to look into. You can also, there's alternate crowdfundings too. But that might be an interesting way to do it, because at least you have a finished product and you'll be able to say, here is the game on Steam right here. This is to produce a physical version of said game. And you're not going to have to worry about the whole like, well, I don't know if I want to buy it because I don't know if it'll actually happen because it's done. Like you're trying to get the publishing stuff.
Exactly.
And I think that's a good way to do it. So
I may do that. The other thing I did want to do as well is I have got that nice cover artwork once I get the logo added onto it as well. I'm going to make a t-shirt. It's going to be t-shirts.
Nice.
I'll have that at some point too. So you'll be able to buy shirts for that kind of stuff. But
I know a place that has a growing store, but now I'm sure you want to make your own coin off it. I got you. But yeah, go for it. So,
yeah.
All right. Bobby, I don't want to turn this into the Pixel Poop show because we are going to talk about other gaming, but this is kind of a big deal. Like the game that Loki's been talking about for a year and a half is finally releasing this week. You can go wishlist it on Steam.
It hasn't even been a year and a half. It's only been six months. Yeah. Hard to believe.
I guess I'm adding the time to car stuff, I think, just in my mind.
Yeah. That's been a while. Yeah.
So I would go wishlist the game on Steam right now if you haven't already. I'm sorry I don't have a link available, but you guys are smart in chat. Somebody will find that link in 5 seconds and post it. So go wishlist it right now, because the more that have it wishlisted, of course, the more people that might see it and all that good stuff. And we want to make sure YYR and Loki get views. And it is, remember, the base is going to be free. So you're not like committing to buy anything or whatever. If you don't want to get the DLC, you don't have to, but the base thing will be free, and you should definitely grab that. I encourage that. So cool. All right. Anyway, okay. Sorry, lots of stuff, but it's important. I mean, that's a long running OLR joke that's climaxing this week. So check that out on Steam. It's important for us to talk about. Let's get into. By the way, I love that behind you tonight. You have that's either the arcade version of Moonwalker or the Genesis version.
It is the arcade
playing behind you.
I've never played the arcade version.
Oh,
I thought that they was the same as the
I have just
Genesis
a couple times.
One.
I have just a couple times. It's awesome. It was a great, great game. And I'm assuming this is your continued to the moon talk. You must have.
No, it was because I just was thinking. I saw like before the show, and it was on the scroll on Bobby's show talking about Endwalker. I was like, oh yeah, Moonwalker. I could do that.
It kind of
ties in with that and the
moon
thing.
Okay, yeah. Clever.
Speaking of to the moon, Dogecoin. Glad I got in when I did.
Did you get on Dogecoin? Good for you.
Yeah, I didn't get in much, like $50, but
still.
It's already doubled. So, you know, that's better than nothing, I guess.
I put $50 on Ethereum just out of the blue last week, and it got to 60. I think now it's around like 58. But I'm just going to let it sit for a little bit, see what happens.
It's money that
would have been like a lotto ticket or a slot machine, like, you know, in a non-COVID world, you know.
And still, like, with the GameStop and, like, AMC, still holding on that stuff for now because it's already dropped in price. It may come back next week, never know, or make bump up a little bit. And if not, I just dump it and buy more Dogecoin.
I'm going to our chat. Fifth Dream, props to you because you found the links to the Steam store first. So thank you for that. All right. Let's get to our kickoff topic tonight. We want to talk about this. Some big gaming news that came out early this week. And I'm sure y'all have a lot of feelings on it. There's what this is and what this isn't. Let's get into it, Loki.
So what it is basically, so Stadia, and to any console, really, the console is only as strong as the games that are on it. And, really when it comes to Stadia, it was like, okay, what are the killer apps? What is the, exclusive game that I got to play on Stadia that's really going to drive me to that platform? Well, now there's not going to be any, because Google Stadia has announced that they are no longer going to be pursuing internal development on their own games. So they've closed its two game studios in Montreal and Los Angeles, and apparently that is impacting about 150 developers. So no new game from Jade Raymond. Now it's just going to continue to operate its service. And it's a $10 monthly Stadia Pro service as well. I mean, I got to be honest, like, this is definitely the writing on the wall. Like, I would be very wary to buy anything on Stadia, purchasing any games, because, I mean, we could be talking about next year this could be shutting down. I mean, I don't know. They're already cutting their losses. So it seems to be that this is just kind of one step into that direction of actually shutting the whole service down.
Well, and to be clear, because I said there's what this news is and what this news isn't, this is not that news that Stadia is shutting down, which I think a lot of people were kind of reading into it that way. This is not that. This is Google saying that they're essentially refocusing, but it's all kind of PR speak that we can see right through for that. They didn't see the need to continue developing the games in-house, whether the games just weren't turning out at the level they were hoping or what it was, if that had to do with some of the response to Stadia, I don't know if we'll know. Unfortunately, and I've said this a million times on the show, and I don't think we say it enough, is that a lot of times in fandom press, which is, what a lot of gaming blogs and all that stuff is, especially when it comes to social media, the reality is, the truth and what Google's intentions are and what Google is trying to do and what Google might have been doing, the truth doesn't matter. And I know that sounds like a really stupid thing to say, but that is the reality. The truth doesn't matter. What matters? Perception. Perception is what matters. How is news perceived? And gotta be honest, when Google first announced Stadia, what were several people in our chat room saying? What were several people on social media saying? What were a lot of people out there saying? Well, Google's getting into this, but Google doesn't have the greatest track record at supporting the stuff they put out there. I give it a couple of years. And now what happens? Google's slowly yanking that support. At least that's the perception. And that's all that matters. So that's why this is It's unfortunate, because I know people who like Stadia. I know people who really fan for Stadia and want to see Stadia do better. And I'm trying to be very cautious to not like rain on the parade, because I'm sure they're already feeling crappy enough after this week and so forth. Good for you for sticking by it and what you believe in. And I don't think cloud gaming is going to be screwed. I'm not even sure Stadia is really super duper done, but I think the imagining scenario that Google kind of painted for us is that Stadia is going to be an invisible console that competes right up there with Xbox One and PlayStation 5 and all. No, you know what? A system is only as good as the games that are on it. And Google has now just said, we're not interested in developing our own games anymore. So that whole thing, I think, is gone. So now it's just about, how else can Stadia be leveraged? Who can insert Stadia into that magic winning formula where maybe Stadia comes back as something else and not that imaginary fourth console? Loki, I want to let you have a say.
No, I was going to say, yeah, exactly that. It's just, I don't know. Like, their whole business model was just kind of not as appealing as something else, like where, you know, you have that kind of Netflix model where you just basically pay a fee and you can have access to a library of games.
And again, that's perception fucking Stadia. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's perception fucking Stadia again. Because when it was announced, oh, Google's putting out this service and you pay $10 a month and you get some games and all that stuff, everybody's kind of thinking, oh, Google's going to do the Netflix things for game. Great. And that's the perception people have, right? Oh, if Google's charging $10 a month, which is what they were out there doing with Pro and all that, then I must be able to get in there and play all those games for free. And then it was like, you can play some games for free. You can play these games that we have the arrangement with, but you don't get to play everything for free. In fact, you have to pay $60 if you want to play like Cyberpunk and stuff. And I think that's where the public went, oh, never mind. And I think that's a big part of what has hurt Stadia from the beginning. So
it's not helping at all. And it's going to be hard to see them. We've had some stuff where, you know, stuff that you think should have supported it. Like, I don't even know if, like, their Google TV stuff supports Stadia. I don't believe it does, which is kind of seems to be a big miss right there as well. It's just, like, half-assed kind of support from Google for it.
And there was a lot of confusion. Like, I didn't even realize until this week that you didn't need a Stadia Pro account to play Stadia games in the browser now. That at some point they flipped the switch for that. I didn't even realize that. Like, Google's had a big problem with messaging. Now, to their credit, during this whole pandemic and the fact that it's killed all these conventions and the opportunity for them to go show the public a little more about this stuff, I will allow them to shift some blame on that, you know, they had a hard time getting the messaging out because of the pandemic. I get that. I understand that. But I still wish they would have invested another year in trying to get the right messaging out if they really wanted this to be successful. But, you know, maybe they just have to take some time to use the rest of this pandemic to figure out what that thing is and then go with it. Because, you know, there's lots of still great ideas and I think uses for cloud gaming out there. You know, I think it would be brilliant if Google partnered up with Valve or something so that when you buy a game on Steam, you can either install it to your computer or you can play it in the cloud. And imagine if, like, demos were available through the cloud. I think so many people want to be doing demos in the cloud where you don't have to wait and download all this stuff. And again, look at a place like Steam when they do like the developer days where they fill up the front page with like 40 different demos. And it's like they all look neat and you want to try them, but like click, download, wait, start. Okay, I didn't care for that one. Uninstalled. Why can't you just click a fucking button and play the game?
I don't know.
Amazon has it where you can click a button and you can get Tide Pods sent to your house tomorrow. Why don't we have that for games? I think we do have it in certain places, but Google should be enabling that here. You know, so I feel like there are still places where Stadia could kind of carve a niche for itself, but it's not going to be the fourth console or whatever. So Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, because it's patented. I don't know if the game delivery thing is. Maybe that is patented. I don't know. The Amazon thing, though, you went over that on your show last week, and that patent expired a couple years ago. I do believe you recapped at the end there. So one-click ordering is open. So I don't know if there's a patent for one-click gaming. You're right. Maybe somebody's patented that already, which is a whole other issue. But I don't have time to get into that on this three-hour show. So, SSG 100 Matt in chat says, could they just be looking to go the Epic route and pay loads for exclusive games? I don't want to see that happen, but it's possible. You're right. It's possible. And if Google's going to do that, they should probably make that. They should have made that move with this announcement. I get you don't want to see it, but if Google wanted to show they were serious with this whole we're changing our model or whatever, then they would have announced whatever game. Even though we aren't developing our own game anymore, we have obtained the exclusive rights to distribute whatever title they come up with to kind of immediately fill in the gap. But they didn't do that, and I don't think that was a great idea. I'm not sure Stadia was incredibly well managed as it is. And then we have to remember Phil Harrison's in charge. And what what has Phil Harrison done for gaming? Like, if you look at his resume, he was in a lot of companies during their low points. Sorry, not sorry. Let the facts speak for themselves. So maybe Stadia just needs somebody else running it. Sorry. So,
yeah.
Anyway, cloud gaming, I'm sure, is not done for. In fact, we're a long way from that because, you know, NVIDIA, I like the NVIDIA thing that I kind of messed around with once because you can kind of use it for free and you can use it with your Steam library. And No Man's Sky was on there. I didn't feel like No Man's Sky looked any better than it did if I'm running it on my own computer. But it was a neat little experiment. So, you know, there's that. Amazon had their own, but then, you know, Amazon is having a lot of struggles making their own game as well. We all know that. I just, again, I would love to see, like, in the PlayStation stores, I want Sony to get this technology or something. Because we know Microsoft's got it, because Microsoft is I still kind of like that cloud thing is coming. Yes, I know they are still, you can do it with your phones and controller and stuff, but I think when it arrives where on my Xbox 360, I can run a cloud, xCloud app and play Halo Master Chief Collection through the cloud or something, I think that will be a great use case argument by Microsoft, but we're not just there yet, but maybe by the end of the year, we'll see. And then Microsoft will have the ability to say, okay, well, for your, you know, $15 a month or whatever they're charging for it now, for Microsoft Game Pass, yes, you get all these games in the cloud. Because a lot of Game Pass games are also tied into xCloud right now. And so Microsoft will be able to deliver that Netflix perception that the audience was associating with Google Stadia. There is that. So, all right. Well, if we got nothing else to say on Stadia, if you want to email us and give us your thoughts on all of this, you sure can. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. SSJ100 Matt says, I mean, it's still the best and most stable place to play Cyberpunk. Why Google is not able to better leverage that, I'll never understand. Again, it's all adding up to part of the thing where I'm like, I just think Stadia just in general just isn't being run well. All right. Moving on, let's talk about our gaming weeks and the types of games that we've been playing this week. Loki, I feel like we kind of covered it, but did you get a chance to play any games besides developing your own?
I played a little bit of Orna and a little bit of Pokemon Go as well. That was a very, very minimal. It's been mostly just working on my game this week.
I figured as much. It's probably taking up most of your week. Well, I look forward to your game releasing so you can actually play some other games this next week.
Yes, yes, me too.
All right. Going back to the last story a little bit to get a comment here. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, they did mention Cyberpunk in the first paragraph of their blog, so they're trying to reference it. I think that's probably the worst place they could reference it. If they want me to take it seriously, and maybe they've done this, I don't know, but I haven't seen it. Buy a Twitch ad. Buy a pre-roll Twitch ad that says Cyberpunk on Stadia, best place to play, with the quotes, best place to experience Cyberpunk, smoothest experience. I don't, you know, use the pull quotes. It should be on Twitch pre-roll ads. It should be on a commercial on TV during that little dog and pony show they got going right now. That should be an ad, although, of course, it costs millions of dollars. So maybe they'll have to go to the network that literally has the dog and pony show with the cheaper ads right now, the counter programming, but they should be putting that stuff out there. So it's, you know, burying it in a press release isn't exactly informing the public and trying to shift the perception. That's just my thing. All right. Black Compat in chat says, I'm currently playing God of War again, but this time on my PlayStation 5. It's so pretty. Yeah, because they went back and they did a like a little upgrade patch, didn't they, on that? Like they did like a whole like PS5 kind of patching for that. So if you're playing it on your PlayStation 5, you get a little something extra. I hope we see that for some more games. So I do hope so, you know, I do hope Sony starts to get into this cloud stuff too. But we'll see. We'll see. All right. Moving on. Let's talk about my gaming week. So honestly, I've continued to play a lot of Final Fantasy XIV. In fact, I even did a whole stream about Final Fantasy XIV on Friday here at VOG Network. But we'll get into that story in a little bit. I mean, see, it's coming up here on the show. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. Outside of Final Fantasy XIV, I've been playing a lot. I've been, of course, playing, you know, the GPS games, Pokemon Go. I was able to catch a lot of the Roselias today, the shiny ones. I got like 12 of them. It's kind of more than I usually get on a shiny day. I think I might have been like 15. I lost count. That's how many I got. That's one of my favorite Pokemon, actually. So I'm glad I got a lot of shinies of that one. So that was fun. As far as like other games I've been playing, there is a new game I checked out this week thanks to Xbox Game Pass. It's Cyber Shadow. Cyber Shadow I checked out this week. So Cyber Shadow is by Yacht Club Games, which was the company that brought us Shovel Knight. So this is kind of like their next game. So Shovel Knight, of course, was a very retro-inspired game that really invoked kind of a lot of the old Capcom classic carts like DuckTales and things like that. Of course, Shovel Knight kind of put its own spin on it. So Cyber Shadow is kind of that, but for Ninja Gaiden,
very much Ninja Gaiden.
To just say it's a clone of that, though, I don't think is accurate. It definitely has, like, the play feel of it is very that. But a lot of the boss design is very different. A lot of the level design is different because I noticed this a little ways into it. There are, like, secret areas and places where there's blocks that you can crush to kind of find a whole other area. And I, admittedly, I've only played a couple stages into it. But looking at the map, it looks like you might have to backtrack Blaster Master style to kind of go visit other areas. Like, it's not just linear. It seems like there might be power-ups and things that allow you to carve out a different path. So I think there might be a little bit of like Ninja Gaiden meets Master Blaster in that. So I think and that's fine by me. Dark Tetsuya in chat says, yeah, feels very Ninja Gaiden inspired and super tough. It is definitely, there is no Bobby Blackwolf mode, I'm sorry to say. It is a challenging game. However, it does appear you have infinite lives, and so it's not like Ninja Gaiden where like you lose three lives and you have to go all the way back to the beginning of the act. You just, every time you die, you just respawn at a save point. So there is that. So it feels a little more like maybe Super Meat Boy in that sense, because you're playing relatively short little bursts to get to the next save point, and you don't have to go like all the way back, which was the thing that was really tough about something like Ninja Gaiden. Again, that's another way that it's kind of different from the Ninja Gaiden formula, where I don't want to say, oh, this is just a clone of that game, because it definitely has its own differences that make even a nails tough game a little bit easier to stomach, if that makes sense. So, but I'm enjoying it. I want to play more of it. And I even got some achievements. Bobby in chat is like, no me mode, no buy. I'm going to tell you, Bobby, why this mode is, or why this game is not going to make you happy. Because I popped two achievements. One of them was worth 16 points. And the other one was worth, I think, 31 points. So it violates Bobby's multiple of five thing. Where, you know, and maybe other people have this too, where you get a little about this. My gamer score must end in 0 or 5. I have no place for a 16 or a 31 or whatever it is. So I think on that principle, it's going to lose Bobby's support. But if your gamer score has already been ruined by something else, or you really don't give a rat's ass about it like me, it's on Game Pass for PC and Xbox. So if you're on that Game Pass thing, you really should just go check it out because you're already paying for it. So go make use of what you're paying for. It's a good game in that regard. So have you know about it, Loki, right? But you just haven't played it?
Yeah, I'm well aware of it because it, you know, it looked very much like Ninja Gaiden, like even down to the sprites and everything.
Yeah, a little bit.
So yeah, very, very aware of it.
Yeah. Even the first boss was like not even like Ninja Gaiden's first boss was like, so, like you just duck and attack a bunch, you win. This one was way, it was like a 3-pronged thing where you kind of had to like hit the middle when it came down and then dodge the guns on the other two. Like it was much more complicated. Like, so it is interesting how even something that's retro inspired can kind of do things that they just really didn't do a lot on 8-bit hardware, whether it's the limitations or whatever it is. Can you imagine, Loki? if you had made Pixel Poops 2 just retro inspired, but you made it for like the Xbox where you don't have to worry about the space. You can do whatever you want.
Except
now you have to go back
for a remaster or something like that. You know?
Now you have to go back and make it all 16:9.
Just make the play fields bigger. Yeah, that would be nice. You know, having, you know, not to adhere to the NES stuff, but
Pixel Poops,
it's fine.
Pixel Poops 3. Please look forward to it. All right.
Well, Pixel Poops 3 has got to be Pixel Poops 3D at that point. I mean, come on. So.
Oh, Virtual Boy game. Awesome. Can't wait.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
All right. Let's get into some gaming news and what else has been going on around the gaming world this week. Loki, what do you got for us?
All right. So, let's see. We've got... This is kind of unique. There's a PlayStation game coming to the Xbox. So... Much like
dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Much like how we have, you know, Microsoft publishing, you know, Minecraft on other platforms,
Mario and Sonic at the Olympics that never happened.
Yes, and then also we have now MLB The Show 21, which is a PlayStation Studios title now coming to the Xbox One and Xbox Series X. Starting this April. So that is the first. It used to be a PlayStation exclusive. And, well, you know, I guess we just need more baseball out there. Because honestly, I think aside from MLB 2K, which I don't think even exists anymore, PlayStation wasn't like the only place you can get a baseball game. So it's nice to see that that is multi-platform now.
I believe we had a story several months ago. We knew this was coming because it had something to do with retaining the license. Like, Sony would not be able to continue to hold the license for that if they didn't put the game out on other consoles. I want to say that's what was playing. Oh, yep. And I'm looking in chat. There it is. Bobby in chat says MLB mandated this or else they were going to pull the license. They wanted a sim game on all consoles. They had the exclusive sim license. Yeah, I remember. See, I remembered something from a few months ago where we actually knew this was coming. It's just it's finally here, and it's that shock of seeing a Sony PlayStation Studio logo on an Xbox. You think it'll come to Game Pass?
I doubt it. We'll see. I don't know. Anything's possible.
SSG 100 Matt is pointing out EA lost the license or really let it go years ago. So this is, you know, even though, yes, there's other baseball sims, this is the only, you know, MLB-endorsed one where that actually has MLB players in it. Does Konami make a – why do I feel like Konami makes a baseball game? I don't know why my brain is going there right now.
Well, they have the Power Up Pro, like, baseball game. It's, like, the kind of anime.
Okay, so it's not real – but it's not MLB. It's just fantasy baseball.
No, it's not MLB. So like
it's like
MLB
Baseball
2K.
Stars or something, yeah.
Yeah, they had MLB 2K back in the day, like, way back in the day. EA had an MLB game. I think even they had, like, I don't know if they had college baseball as well. EA used to have a ton of sports games, and they kind of slimmed it down a bit. But,
I forgot about that.
Coming back.
SS2100 Matt says they do have RBI baseball, but that game is more made in-house by MLB. Sean322 clarifies it has real players, but it's more animated. And Bobby kind of clarifies that as arcadey. So, So it's still going to be that shock. Do you think Sony may experiment putting anything else out on Microsoft's consoles? Probably not unless they're forced to. Huh?
No, I doubt it. Yeah,
I doubt it too. But what about, you know, there's always that rumor about Microsoft trying to put their stuff on other consoles too. Do you think we might see some of their studios open up? I think it's certainly possible, especially when we're talking about things like Bethesda, which Microsoft now owns. Like, I think a lot of those games are still going to come out on Sony and even whatever works for the Nintendo Switch, they'll put out on the Nintendo Switch. So it is interesting that we're all kind of losing our shit over seeing a Sony logo on a Microsoft box. But, like, I think we're all kind of prepared for at least Microsoft assets to show up on other consoles. It may just not have a Microsoft logo on it. It may have Bethesda's logo, but that's going to happen. So
yeah,
it's kind of interesting. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says the new Bethesda games will not go to Switch or PS5. There's no way the Elder Scrolls 6 will be on any console not in the Xbox ecosystem. Have they clarified that? Because I thought they said they did interviews where they were actually pushing the opposite narrative, where the guy was saying, well, we haven't made any decisions on that yet, you know, and you can maybe read the tea leaves where it's gonna go that way. I feel like it might happen, but, and this is a big but, Microsoft's gonna have the must-have version. There's gonna be a bunch of shit that's cut out for the other stuff. It's gonna be like when Destiny first came out, it had like a whole extra zone on PlayStation that wasn't even on the Microsoft version. And Sony was like pushing it almost like it was one of their own exclusive games because they had such a great deal with Activision to get all this exclusive stuff. I feel like that could be kind of a middle ground where Microsoft still has like the must-have version, but they give a little pittance to the other ecosystems. So we'll see. Bobby says, but if you want to play Elder Scrolls 6, you'll need an Xbox, just like if you want to play God of War, you need a PlayStation or a PC. For probably either of those games eventually, the way some of the other Sony things have been going as of late. So we'll give that one to the PC fanboys. All right. Anyhow, let's move on and talk about some other news that came out this week. And this news was very exciting for me, which was the new Final Fantasy XIV expansion that was announced. And of course, I talk a lot in my gaming weeks about how I play a lot of Final Fantasy XIV. So, of course, I was very excited to watch this announcement showcase that they did on Friday, because essentially this was the event that I'd gone to in Vegas 3 times. Now, we all know why it didn't happen in person this time and why it was delayed a few months. Hello, COVID. But they finally kind of gave us the information that we would have got at the scheduled. Actually, they were going to move it this year to San Diego. They had announced that just before the pandemic started, was that, oh, yeah, we're going to do Fan Fest in October, but it's in San Diego this time. So for whatever reason, they were moving it. And then, of course, they called it off altogether. So we got some of the information about the new expansion, and as Loki kind of referred to earlier in the show, it is called Endwalker, which I love it because you can abbreviate it as EW for short. EW, David. But now it's EW, Yorza. EW, Yoshi P. Anyway, it's going to be coming out this fall, so it will be out this year. One of the things that they showcased as part of the event was a new healer job, which is the first healer job they've put in the game since Astrologian, which, if I remember right, would have been 2015 was when Heavensward came out and the Astrologian. So it's been a little while since we've had a healer in the game. So Sage, and the Sage is a barrier healer. There will be a melee DPS, but we don't know what it is yet. A lot of sleuths on Reddit and people that I know are trying to figure it out from some of the things that were in the trailer. It is believed that there is multiple cases where a scythe has been visible, and some of the t-shirts that Yoshi P was wearing have referenced a Reaper or a scythe type of character. So people are kind of going that direction with it, that it will be some type of DPS that wields a scythe. It was also clarified in a Japanese interview that Yoshi P did. The class will share gear with Dragoon, which means it's going to be a strength-based class, not a dexterity-based class like Ninja would use. So there is all of that coming into it. And a lot of people thinking we're getting some type of... Some people are saying Necromancer. Some people are saying like a Reaper. I think Final Fantasy XIV has done this very well, where they've kind of invented their own classes based around Final Fantasy history. So I think we're going to get some type of scythe-based melee class that will be the class that people thought Dark Knight would be. So there will be that. So let's see some other things that they announced. This will be the end of the story. They have started the story with Zodiark and Hydaelyn all the way back in 1.0 in Realm Reborn, really. This will be the end of that. However, and they stress this many times, this will not be the end of Final Fantasy XIV. This will not be the end of Yoshi P's involvement. I think one way to kind of equate it is that this is the end of Marvel Cinematic Universe Part 1, and then Marvel Cinematic Universe Part 2 will begin in patch 6.1. So this is Endgame coming out Endwalker, Endgame, Okay, so there's that. So, and then after this will be like a new kind of Final Fantasy 14 era. I thought it was very neat that Yoshi P came out and said, I see this as my life's work. Because, you know, with his involvement producing, but not directing, Final Fantasy 16, some folks have kind of wondered what his future is. And I would assume it's inevitable that Final Fantasy 17 or 18 is another MMO. Why wouldn't they? And why wouldn't they want Yoshi P to be involved somehow? But it's not happening yet. So Yoshi P is staying with Final Fantasy 14. The other big news that was announced, a PlayStation 5 version of the game will be coming out. And it will begin in a beta on April 13th. And this is the best news. You don't have to buy the PlayStation 5 version if you already own the PlayStation 4 version.
That's
you
nice,
can,
at
yeah,
least.
You can just roll over that license to PlayStation 5. Actually, no, you don't even have to roll over a license. It just is looking for your PS4 license, basically, which is great. Some may recall when the game first came out, Realm Reborn and I think the first expansion, Heavensward, were on PlayStation 3. When they finally sunsetted, you can no longer play Realm Reborn, Final Fantasy 14 on PlayStation 3. They terminated that support, but they gave you a year, maybe a year and a half, where they said you can convert your PlayStation 3 license to a PlayStation 4 license. But once you do it, you can't go back to PlayStation 3. So this is... But they didn't really put that same quantifier on this PS5 rollover. But if you own a PlayStation 5, why would you want to go back and play this on PlayStation 4? Play it on PlayStation 5. I suppose everybody's situation is unique, and maybe the PlayStation 5 isn't in the place that you want to play. I don't know. But I think for most people, they're going to be very happy with this news. There will be a virtual fan fest coming up in May 15th and 16th, where the rest of the expansion's details will be unearthed. And they didn't stop there because they still have a whole nother patch for the current expansion, Shadowbringers, that they went on and detailed later that night. We didn't stream that one because, as I figured, it was mostly stuff we were expecting. It was, here's a new dungeon. We're adding story content here. It's kind of the only maybe thing you could say about Final Fantasy 14. I think it's they've supported it very well. The game gets regular patches, but I think one of the ways they're able to make the game regular is it's very formulaic. Like the odd number patch is when you get the new 24-man raid and you get one new dungeon and you get this amount of story. The even numbered patch, you get the new 8-man raid and you might get one trial. And so it's like we kind of all knew what was coming before we watched it. So there was that. But you know what? It's Final Fantasy 14. The story is great. I love the game. I'm still eating it up, even if I'm saying that's it. So, all right. So yeah, looking forward to the Final Fantasy 14 expansion coming out later this year. I'm sure I will talk plenty more about it because it is one of my favorite games. Oh, I have to say this too. Loved that there was so much Final Fantasy IV inspiration in the game. It's the one Final Fantasy that I feel like doesn't have a lot of representation in the game right now, and it's one of my favorites. And so I love that they're really going full tilt with this. You can get a Lunar Whale mount, an 8-person mount, if you get like a fan fest ticket, so you'll have to pay money for it, but still. And they played some of the music. So their music guy, Soken, who is like the Final Fantasy 14 soundtrack, is stunning. If you've never heard it, you really owe it to yourself to listen to some tracks from the Final Fantasy 14 soundtrack, because Soken is proving himself in every way to be an heir to that legacy's music and what Nobuo Uematsu started many, many, many years ago. Soken is really fucking good. And he reinterpreted the Final Fantasy IV, like, moon theme, or like the Lunar Whale theme. It's so good. You have to hear it. So I'm really excited about that. And of course, you know, you're going to the moon. They're putting out minions for Rosa, Edge, and Rydia that are going to be part of the virtual fan fest. And I'm really excited about all of that. So loving the Final Fantasy IV love. Thank you very much. Okay, now I'm done talking about Final Fantasy 14. We can talk about other video games. Loki, what do you have for us?
Just finishing up some editing. Anyways.
Are you working on your game now during the show?
No.
Of course you are.
I was just making some changes to Wikipedia, that's all. Anyways.
doing some marketing, I see.
Yeah. So anyways, we've got news about what might have been. So Netflix was originally going to have a Zelda show, but it then pulled it back because it leaked out that it was coming out. So apparently this was a while ago, back in 2015.
It was that long ago? Because I remember these rumors like they were the other day. I thought it was like 2 years ago. Anyway.
It was a long time ago. Actually, probably even before that. So they said that came out when they were talking about, I guess, this College Humor stop motion Star Fox thing that they were working on, the Fantastic Mr. Star Fox. It came out in 2011. And so apparently because of around that time, there was reports that Netflix wasn't going to do Legend of Zelda anymore because basically that it had leaked out that they were going to be doing a Legend of Zelda show, and that kind of, I don't know, spooked Nintendo, but basically say, hey, listen, we're not going to do it anymore now that it's leaked out that we were going to do that. Seems silly to me that that would be a thing, but Nintendo be Nintendo, I guess. So we can't have Zelda. We can't have nice things because you guys won't stop leaking information about it.
Maybe they were worried that a lot more was going to leak out before it was ready. It does seem like an odd reason to pull the plug completely on a project as well. In fact, usually the hype machine is kind of a big deal in Hollywood. I don't know if this is just I admit I'm a little ignorant to this, so I apologize. But I don't know if this is maybe a culture thing around like Japanese culture and the hype for cinema and TV and projects around there and our culture. Because like we find out about projects before somebody's ever even been cast. You know, Marvel gets out there on stage and says, here's the roadmap for Marvel Cinematic Universe Phase 2 all the way through 2025 before we've even, like, inked a deal to write a fucking script. Like, that's just part of the hype. Like, y'all think video games are announced too early? Look at fucking movies, okay? Like, we find out about this. So to find out that a project is being started years before they've even shot one frame or anything is very much a part of like the Hollywood Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, Variety, Deadline, and all that type of culture. I wonder if it's just, and I am ignorant. I don't know how this works in Japan because I haven't lived there or followed enough of their culture there where maybe it is not the same type of hype machine. So when Nintendo kind of heard that this was going on, they saw it as a threat and they pulled the plug. That's all I've got to go off of, honestly, because you just don't usually hear about these things stopping because of leaks. But also Nintendo is fiercely protective of its properties, for better and for worse. So
I mean, it's unfortunate. Does this mean we're not getting the Switch Pro anymore because it's leaked out, you know, that there are lots of information allegedly has leaked out about it, you know, that it's coming. So does that mean we're not getting that anymore?
I doubt it. Tiger Claw in chat says, also, Nintendo is banking on that Super Mario Brothers animated movie. It could make or break them in terms of making movies from some of their IPs. Could Universal have approached them when the rumor came out and said, hey, we can do something better, but you've got to call this deal off? I don't know. Maybe I'm adding too much drama into it.
I don't think that's going to be anything that has to do with it. I think if anything now, granted, this took place like years ago. I mean, look at like what we have on Netflix now. There's like so many series based off of video games that have done really well. So I would think that they'd be less hesitant to put out something now. Maybe there's something in development and it just hasn't been leaked out because they learned the lesson the first time. I don't know. So I doubt that now if something like that were to happen, I would think that they would be ahead of it, kind of trying to promote it a bit. Mm-hmm. But then again, Nintendo's weird. And so who knows?
Who knows? All right. What else you have for us, Loki?
All right. So apparently, you know, we had the Mario sets come out for Lego now. And technically, we had a Sonic the Hedgehog set come out in the form of a pack for Lego Dimensions. But now, thanks to the whole, fan submission process that they have available for Lego Ideas, there is a set that reached 10,000 fan supporters, which means it goes through the Lego review process. And Lego has decided that, yes, we will go ahead and make a Sonic Green Hills set for Lego. So it's got right now, based on the initial prototype, was like this giant Eggman robot, Sonic the Hedgehog minifigs, and you know, some stuff that you would see in Green Hill Zone. But I would imagine we might see some more sets based on that if it sells well. But it's still pretty cool that that's going to be a thing. No word on necessarily when it's coming, but I'd expect sometime later this year. That's pretty exciting, I think. It makes sense. They've already had the mold for the Sonic character already, so that's kind of half the battle right there. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Have to check it out.
I'm curious to see if they'll gamify it at all, kind of like the Mario one. Because well, there's like some impressive technology there.
I mean, yeah, that would be cool if they did that. I don't think so in this case. I think it'll just be just like a set, kind of like how the Minecraft sets aren't really gamified. It's just, you know, Lego set. I mean, it would be cool to have some more game type stuff with it. I mean, Dimensions was pretty cool, but, you know, I don't know. They don't sell that stuff anymore, but at least, you know, they have the mold, so that saves them some time, I guess.
True. If they didn't destroy those.
No, they don't destroy that stuff.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I mean, you can still play the Mario set with it. You know, true. You can make Mario versus Sonic happen in your imagination, in your house, with the dueling Lego sets.
Except Mario is going to be super huge compared to, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog, because Sonic is minifig size and Mario is much larger than that. So
I'm sure your imagination can make up the difference.
I have no imagination. Sizes must be accurate. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm with Orange Right. Mario just ate a Mega Mushroom. That's all.
All right.
All right. But Sonic goes fast. All right. Let's move on and talk about a PlayStation 5 game that's getting a surprising kind of little change here before it's out. Destruction All-Stars has it just recently released. I didn't realize this actually came out. Destruction All-Stars, the developer behind the game, Lucid Games, has put out an update for the game, and it disables voice chat by default. In a tweet, they wrote, Lucid Games put, All-Stars Hotfix 1.2.2 is live. Hotfix note threads. Disabled multiplayer lobby voice communications by default for all players. We are actively working on longer-term enhancements to the voice communication system. So, apparently the way it was before, voice was on by default, and it wasn't exactly easy to just mute everybody. You had to go into your PlayStation 5 menu and disable voice chat there. Otherwise, it would, because even if you turned it off for your headset, you would still get voices through the DualSense controller speaker. And I'm sure there were no problems at all.
People were saying naughty words through that.
You mean if you put a microphone and no accountability in front of somebody, they're going to say some really shitty things? You don't say. But it wasn't just that. But a lot of people don't even know that, like, the DualSense has, like, a mic thing built in. So some people didn't even know that they were transmitting. So they would get background noise that would come through, like the shifting around of the controller or the, have you ever played like Mario Kart online or something and somebody blue shells you and you're like, fuck that guy. And if you don't know that you're muted, it's going to come, or not muted, it's going to come through, right? Or here's the classic one too. You're playing a game and you're getting your ass kicked by somebody online. And then all of a sudden you just hear coming through the speaker, Mom, Mom, I want the pizza rolls, Mom. Right? And again, somebody doesn't know that their voice is being transmitted through the speaker. So now you just found out you're getting your butt kicked by a little kid who's waiting on pizza rolls. However, unfortunately, the really shitty stuff online was also making its way through. A review on Ars Technica of the game actually called out obscenities, racist slurs, and an alt-right podcast featuring dark web and QAnon content that was played on replay, because that's what you want to hear when you're trying to do your escapism video games, I'm so sure. So, they removed voice chat by default, and actually, in this day and age, that's what most games do, so it's a little surprising they didn't do that way to start. It's a very tough lesson to learn, but I will tell you what, I don't voice chat on games, period, unless I am playing a private game with people I know. That's it. And then even then, it's usually not through the game. It's usually through Discord. Like, just to make sure it's even under a separate setup. And because you never know. Like, it might be a PvP thing. You don't even want your voice going over to the other team. So, see a Tiberian chat saying of my yelling, I thought that was Toad. It might have been. It very well might have been. Toad. All right. Moving on. Loki, you got a story on something I'm very excited about.
You're excited about corrupted source codes, so you're not going to be able to get some of the DLC for Mass Effect? That's a weird thing to be excited about.
I'm not that. All right, shut up. Shut up.
But yeah, unfortunately, that tends to happen sometimes. You know, you have something you want to re-release in like a 4K Legendary Edition, and you go back and, oh, the source code's corrupted. Oh, no. So apparently, there is going to be some DLC missing. So Pinnacle Station, which I guess is the third of the Citadel DLC. And I'm not sure. Are they going to try to remake it? Maybe not.
No, it's Citadel's different. Citadel's different DLC for part three. Pinnacle Station was the third, I think, DLC that they did for the first game. And I honestly, like, you know, some of the hardcore fans and stuff are like, oh, it's a good, but I'm like, honestly, there's so much fucking content. You're not missing that much. Like, calm down. You're getting more, you're getting more than the Wii U players got. Okay. The Wii U players for Mass Effect 3 got the first DLC and then the entire development, fuck it. We're not doing the rest of it. So
surprised they couldn't reverse engineer some of that stuff. Maybe just don't want to, but yeah, the reason why that this is not necessarily something that's recoverable versus some of the other stuff is because it was based or wasn't actually developed in-house by BioWare, but is actually outsourced to Demerge Studios. And I guess they don't have the original files that are in an uncorrupted state. So that's unfortunate. But they said that, you know, they could bring it back, but it'd take another 6 months just to do this with most of the team that we've got. And I wish we could do it, but we're not going to be able to. So
there's going to be so much. Like, I'm telling you, those games take like 30 to 40 hours to get through just the base content. And you're getting three of them. And then they're going to be adding a lot of DLC that can be like 6 or 7 hours on their own. Like, there's several of them for part two and three. You're going to have plenty of content for these games. Don't worry about this one little piece that's missing. And I'm with She-Hulk in our chat who says Mass Effect 1 is going to be fun anyway. They're doing a lot of, I mean, they have gone back and changed a lot with 1. The interface looks a lot more like 2 and 3 now. Like, they totally changed the interface. They've obviously gone back and done some of the graphics. There's some controversy around what they've done with some of the graphics. Some people did not like the look that Eden Prime had because it kind of changed the vibe a little bit on the planet. I want to, you know, we've had such a short trailer. I'm taking much more of a wait and see approach. And my honest response to a lot of the people that are criticizing that is like, you are free to, you know, have your criticisms, but you're going to buy the game anyway. Don't act like you're not going to. Like, if you are that level of fan where you're criticizing those sorts of things, I'm like, don't kid yourself. You're going to buy the game. And then at least once you've kind of actually like played through the whole thing outside of just the trailer, then you can kind of formulate your long-term opinion and either you didn't like it or you didn't, or you liked it or you didn't, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I'm sure you all want to know, since I've effectively bought Mass Effect 3 on the PC, the Xbox 360, the PlayStation 3, and the Wii U, I even bought the Wii U version when it was on sale. Will I be buying Mass Effect 3 a fifth time through this? And the answer is, of course I will be. Of course I will be picking this up. I haven't decided yet, though. I think I'm going to get it on Series X, but there's a part of my brain that thinks I might finally buy into PlayStation 5 before then. And if I do, I might get it on PlayStation 5 only because the inevitable day that this goes over to EA Play and thus Microsoft Game Pass, I will then have it a sixth time if I buy it on the PlayStation first. But that's only if I get a PlayStation 5, which I actually don't think I'm going to be able to do by the time this is out. So I will probably realistically end up getting it on my Series X. So there is that. SSG 100 Matt in chat says, Rob, smart thinking, diversifying. I know. I got to think about how can I own this in as many places as possible. All right. Moving on. Loki, what else you have for us?
So apparently Activision has been accused of stealing the concept for a Call of Duty character. So there's this character that was created called Kay Janis, who was part of a film pitch. And apparently somehow they got Activision got a hold of this character or figured out, you know, the likeness of this. And they decided to use it in a Call of Duty game. And they went to such extents to actually use the same photographer that they used for this pitch for a movie, use the same makeup artist, the same person that was in those photography sessions as well, and basically almost the same design for hair and costume. But allegedly, you know, they didn't steal anything. But apparently this... the original guy that pitched this to the movie studio actually had copyrighted his story and characters back in 2012, 2013. Hmm. But the photographs were a little bit more recent in 2020. But still, though, I mean, it's hard to say. Like, I mean, because a lot of this is just the person that they have playing this part, which is actually a streamer by the name of Alex Zedra. Hmm. But I don't know. At the same time, that's kind of like it's awfully close. Like, I get it if it's based off the same person, but like they look pretty identical. Hmm. I mean, because it's the same person, but I don't know. So anyways, that's a lawsuit that we're going to hear about for a while, I guess.
Until they settle out of court and then we don't get any of the details, because when they settle out of court, we never get the details. That's just the way it goes. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know nothing about the character. I have nothing to say about this because I really don't know. So Loki, I kind of have to go with your opinion if you think it's if there's any merit to this or not, or if it's a little more frivolous.
It's hard to say because all they're showing like photographs with like the promotional materials, which basically looks like a photograph of the same person. But I mean, they're dressed up in a very similar like military fatigues and everything, the same like loadout and the same hair and everything, which is. Like, if it's the same person, I get that, but the same hair and makeup and the same kind of outfit, that's a little questionable. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just, especially if they allegedly use those original photographs as kind of a base to build the character off of and, like, modeled off of that, that is also questionable.
All right. Well, let's move on and talk about another story here before we get to the classic game of the week. And this has to do with the delay for an older game that was being remade, but apparently it ran into some problems. I'm talking, of course, about Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. If you weren't already aware, they are remaking this game for current consoles, and they've decided to bump it back a little bit, saying in a statement, "We have made the decision to shift the release for Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, Sands of Time Remake, to a later date. This extra development time will enable our teams to deliver a remake that feels fresh while remaining faithful to the original. It should be noted, they don't give a target window in this update," which is fine because they probably don't know it yet, especially with everything pandemic-y going on right now. They probably have no idea how long it's going to take to fix some of the issues that they have been having. And apparently some folks were kind of in some of the like pre-footage and stuff were seeing that there were some issues. So it sounds like they've definitely made the right call here and bumping it back. It'll be interesting to see, like, is this what? Is this mean holiday? Does this mean, like, a year? How long is it going to be? Who knows? So, by the way, it should also be noted, we just talked about this game getting delayed not that long ago. It was supposed to originally come out in January. Then they delayed it back to March. Now they're delaying it till who knows when. So... this game will be out for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC via Epic Games Store and Ubisoft's own Uplay when it does come out. So we will see. The original, of course, came out in 2003. Who knows? Maybe recent spotlights on buggy games that have come out scared them off. I don't know, but there's that. SG100 Matt in our chat says, "Whatever, get it done when it's done. Sands of Time was a great game, and messing up this remake would suck." Yes. I know there were some people that I know that really loved the Prince of Persia games that were kind of saying, like, why haven't we had a new Prince of Persia game in a while? So this will definitely be something to hold it over, but it's got to be done right. Or else, you know, people will be very upset, won't they? All right.
We don't want upset people.
No, of course not. All right. Let's get to a segment then where we spotlight a game that is bug-free, a classic game, shall we? All right, so now we're going to use the magic of internet radio and Discord and all of that to get the classic game of the week, where every week here on the show, Dark Sakura steps into the gaming vault to find a game that she thinks, hey, you guys should be checking this game out, not that newfangled stuff. And I say magical because we actually have Dark Sakura here with us, even though she is not on the show tonight. Hi, Jamie, how are you?
Well, I'm sick with a sinus infection, so we'll see once I talk to the doctor tomorrow.
Boo, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad you're able to spare a few minutes here before the show tonight to still walk us through the classic game of the week. So, without further fanfare, what is the classic game of the week?
The classic game of the week is known in America as Sorcerer Striker. S-O-R-C-E-R, Striker. And it's a vertically scrolling shooter game that came out in 1993. It was developed by Rising, which is now called Aiding, published by the Able Corp in Japan and in Europe. So basically, you are playing one of four bounty hunters who has to overthrow the Goblin Empire and reclaim a bounty that was placed on King Kadwena of Violent Kingdom. So the series is actually the Maho Daisakusen series. So the first game really was known as Maho Daisakusen. It also includes in that trilogy Kingdom Grand Prix and Daimaho. It's also the first game that was made by Rising. So at any rate, the company was founded actually by former Naxatsoft and Compile staff. Folks who worked on the Aleste series, and we all know how great those shooters are.
And I know Compile from, you know, Gardic and all that stuff. Yeah,
Yeah, for sure. Well, Compile also gave us Puyo Puyo, remember?
Oh, that's true. Good, great company. One, probably every game of theirs has been a classic game at some point or another.
Well, that remains to be seen. But at any rate, the game first had an arcade release. It came out in May 1993. It did later get other ports, and we can talk about that a bit later. So at any rate, it is a science fantasy theme. So it's a shooter up. It's very similar to Spriggan, where you play one of four characters through six different stages. I just love that you're in the Violent Kingdom. It does have different elements from other Compile shooters. So like, you know, the scrolling background until you reach the boss and all that, and you're different weapons, your main weapon and your sub weapon, and you have bombs to clean off the screen, but it also has some other stuff in common with Musha, where you fight different mini bosses at certain stages of the game. You have a respawn system where you immediately start where you died. You can get hit by an enemy or collide with stage objects to lose a life or lose your firepower as you go along. So basically, you have two loops of the game, too. You have to complete the first loop, and then you start over, and you get the true ending when you finish the second loop. So the plot of the game actually comes a bit more through its supplementary materials with it. So, you know, there were different things that were released with it that would outline a little bit more of the story. So, anyway, a little bit more about the development of the game. It was developed by a crew of about four members, including actually with designer Nakashima Kazuyuki, and the programmer of the Spriggan game, Toyama Ichi, Yoko Kenichi, and a freelance composer, Motoyama Atsuhiro. And so they worked on this one. Actually, it came, Toyama was working right after the arcade release of both Spriggan and Spriggan Mark II. And those are games I might be bringing up later, too. And so they were they founded Rising right after that with the desire to make a new game. And in fact, they also had connections to Toa Plan, you know, another game that did some amazing shooters. So they worked with Toa Plan for as the consultant. Toa Plan was their consultant for it. And so the game started in development March 1992, and the staff was working out of the bedroom of an apartment using development tools provided by Toa Plan. And it was going to start off as a Chinese martial arts shooter called Hagogekiden Saifa. However, it went a little bit different because they wanted to add worldwide appeal to it. And so they took things from different games that the others had worked on. And like I said, Musha, many of the other compile games, and wanted to make it a little bit more fantasy, kind of a steampunk aesthetic to it.
So they changed the whole kind of concept of the game and they developed it in an apartment? That's nuts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about what people do with games now.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. Especially, you know, you have to remember it was a very different industry in the 90s, and teams were generally smaller as well. But still, I mean...
And they also did have support from Toa Plan. So yeah, they had development tools, like really good development tools. So they did some special designs with the ships to give them, like, that these hand-like extremities to give them character. But the designs were also an experiment to see if they could give operability and personality to keep it from, but have it not interfere with their hitbox. So, you know, they wanted to give a sense of story. They wanted it to be a little bit different. So at any rate, you know, they even, you know, tried to put in, like, their muscular dude and then their little moe girl, you know, like an idol singer type girl, you know. But they didn't really have, you know, all the appeal they quite wanted, but they were able to get things to where they wanted to. And also, some of the characters were based off of Wizardry, the game series Wizardry.
Oh, yeah.
So they had some difficulty deciding on a name. It was first titled Maho Daisenso. And then they, with a little bit more brainstorming, it came out as Maho Daisakusen. And that's where they, you know, kind of went through to produce this colorful, this vivid game. So it was first released into arcades by the Able Corporation across Europe and Japan, May 1993, and they used a Toa Plan licensed arcade board. There was a CD music album out in 1994 that was published in Japan by Shinseisha. And then there was a manga adaptation. Remember, I said there was more material that came with it. The first port of the game was, of course, on the X68000, published by EA Victor. And that came out on December 16th, 1994, and had a lot of different options, including different MIDI support. Then it came out on FM Towns, also again by Electric Arts Victor, in February 1995. And it had the Redbook audio from the X68000 version, but it also ran at a lower frame rate and had missing special effects. There was a mobile phone version by EasyWeb that was developed by Aiding once they were no longer Rising. And on November 2017, M2 released a new version of Sorcerer Striker as part of their M2 shot triggers for PS4, and it had exclusive additions including an easier difficulty setting and two aircraft simultaneously in single player. As of August 1st, 1983, in Japan, Game Machine listed as their seventh most popular arcade game at the time. There were plenty of comparisons with Truxton made. The X68000 version had a lot of positive reception. I've seen it in hand, and it actually is a pretty damn good version. A few people were like, it doesn't have what Alest had. You know, different people have just come out on a limb and said this is actually one of their favorite shooter games. And it says it tends to be for... actually, Kurt Kalata for Hardcore Gaming 101 said, quote, "It's an excellent game, though one that tends to be forgotten in favor of Rising's more innovative and ambitious titles." Famitsu gave the PS4 version 25 out of 40. And we know how tough Famitsu is. So it is the first one in the Maho Daisakusen trilogy. There was a sequel called Kingdom Grand Prix, came out in arcades in 84, and then came out on Sega Saturn by Gaga Communications. It's a different kind of game, though. And then there was Daimaho, which was released for arcades by Capcom in 2000. So I actually think it's a Capcom CPS 1, I want to say. Don't quote me yet. I think it's a CPS 1. And then the characters that were in there, their names are Gain, Chita, Miyamoto, and Bonum, are guest characters in Battle Garega and Armed Police Batrider. Battle Garega is one I'm probably going to do again in the future because it's one of those iconic shooters.
Now, don't go spoiling it all.
No, I just said I might do it. But, I mean, this game is... I've played it a couple of times. I mean, I'm not super great at shooters, but it's a fun one. I mean, it definitely has kind of that mix of compile meets, you know... compile shooter meets Aleste, so it's pretty cool.
And it's not every day you hear about wizardry inspiring a shooter, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a couple of the characters that were inspired by wizardry.
But still.
But it's you know, it's a worthwhile game, you know. And hold on, I'm going to real quick confirm what Daimaho was released on. I want to say that it was a CPS... sorry, it was CPS 2. My apologies.
All right.
Yeah. I knew it was, like, an earlier, though, one, so there you go. But yeah, I mean, even the sequels are really great games. I played Daimaho before I played the first one, so.
All right. Well, thank you for walking us through your classic game of the week, Sorcerer Striker.
Sorcerer.
I keep wanting to say, it's the wizardry on the brain. I keep wanting to say Sorcerer. Okay, Sorcerer Striker.
It's a magic-related game, so.
Yeah. All right, well, before we go back to the studio live, Dark Sakura, any parting words for the folks tonight?
I would like for my sinuses to be drilled out and inflated so that they don't feel like my face is going to crush itself.
All right, well, you should let your doctor know. All right, take care, Dark Sakura, and we'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
All right, thanks to Jamie Dark Sakura for filling in there earlier today. So we still got to have her voice on the show this week with the classic game of the week, Sorcerer Striker, which I have to admit, not a title I was super familiar with. And this happens with her picks sometimes. I'm like, I don't remember this one. And I was watching chat during that segment, and there was several people in chat kind of having it like, I swear I've played something like this, but I don't think it was this. The closest thing I can think of is Dragon Spirit, but that's where you're like actually playing a dragon, but it would still have like that same kind of like wizardry type of thing. But I can't think of what it is that's really like this, but that was a good pick. It was fun to check out. Speaking of classics, by the way, Mr. Smush just ran right under this table here. You can't see it on stream. He's got a case of the zoomies right now, so I'm a little bit distracted. Mr. Smush, of course, my kitty. Loki, you know how I drive down J Street downtown a lot to refill up on my Pokeballs. I use Bluetooth, so I'm not trying to spin... Pokestops and all that. There's that little retro gaming store. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
It's brand new.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I finally went today and to check it out. So, and I bought something while I was there. And it's, I don't know if anyone noticed, we have a new decoration in the studio. I'll try to take it down from the hook here. It's a little hard to see, but it's a little, it's one of those like 3D frames. If I tilt it a little bit, you can see some of the 3D, but you can maybe see what screen it is representing there. Hopefully you can kind of tell. Sorry, I know
that's
it's
pretty cool, yeah.
On Twitch. And sorry to the podcast folks. What's that, Logie?
I said that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I like this. It was only $20. So I was like, all right, I'm kind of into that. And of course, it's Castlevania is the game that's Simon kind of going at the Reaper there in that. So I thought that was really cool. So I picked that up. So yeah. Little speaking of classic games, a little trinket I picked up this week. So that's dangerous because they have more of them. There was one for Contra and there was one for Sonic. And I was like, I kind of want them all. I think that would be a fun little decoration for the new studio whenever we get there. So SJO and Hunter Matt says, oh, those things are cool. See them at cons a bunch. Yeah, I think so. One thing I noticed about this place, they definitely don't just have games. They're leaning hard into like gaming culture, you know, hats, lamps, you know, the kind of like GameStop's have to do too, is, you know, you can't just make your money off the games alone. It's kind of the gaming culture stuff. But I saw this and I thought it was cute. Now, I love Castlevania, so I had to pick that. And plus, this is like my favorite stage and music in Castlevania, so it's a good pick. So there you go. Anyway, all right, let's do some rapid fire news, shall we, where we quickly talk about some other things going on in the gaming world this week. Loki.
Yes. So apparently, because it's gotten a lot of attention about how tall is that very large woman or vampire in the new Resident Evil Village game. So Lady Dimitrescu, she is now officially, according to Capcom, 9'6". So if you need to, you know, need that for some reason, I don't know, but people were fawning over, and now you know, 2.9 meters or 9.6 feet.
Thank you, Capcom, for legitimizing all of that. Thanks.
9'6" inches, I guess, nine and a half feet. And then we have Final Fantasy XII, the Zodiac Age, finally heading to Games Pass. So that's going to be coming out very soon. I don't know the exact date yet, but right around the corner. Oh, here we go. So it's going to be coming out February 11th, and along with it, Jurassic World Evolution, The Falconer, Project Winter, Ghost of a Tale, Stealth Inc. 2, A Game of Clones, and Wolfenstein Youngblood.
Hmm.
So those will be coming out early this month.
All right. Well, I want to talk a little bit about Ingress, because I play that game a little bit, as you guys know, and I don't often talk about the news and updates for this, but this one kind of also goes out to my pals who also play Pokemon Go, another Niantic game, because a lot of times where Ingress tends to go, Pokemon Go tends to follow, and I'm going to talk about a monthly sub that they have announced that's coming to Ingress, where you will actually be able to give them money on a monthly basis for some additional perks. I should point out, though, because you guys, you know, I know a lot more people play Pokemon Go than play Ingress. But one thing that's finally came to Ingress this week after like years of asking, and this has been in Pokemon Go forever. When you go to the, well, in Pokemon Go, you can see if you've spun a Pokestop or not, right? If there's a little white ring around the Pokestop, then you've never visited it. And once you spin it, then that white ring goes away, right? Well, in Ingress, there are specific achievements for visiting unique places and hacking stuff and capturing stuff. And we have never been able to see if we've ever hacked or captured a portal before. But now on the Ingress Intel map, as of this week, you can actually have it display. These are portals you've hacked. These are portals you've captured, to make the hunt for unique portals a lot easier. And they say that they are bringing this to the in-game client as well. So that is very exciting. It was really fun for me to go and look at a city like Chicago that I've visited a couple times, and I did an Ingress anomaly there years ago. You may remember I've talked about it on this show. It was really fun to see, like, here are the parts of town that I hacked up and down the street. Here's the parts where I must have just done a couple hacks driving by in a, you know, in a Lyft or Uber or whatever. And here are places with tons of portals I didn't touch at all. It's kind of fun to me. I like the whole, like, here's how to track where I've been in the world. Anyway, I'm digressing a little bit, but I'm just kind of showing, like, Ingress, Pokemon Go, they're tied together a little bit sometimes. And Niantic announced this week that there will be a monthly subscription coming to Ingress called CORE, which stands for Community Offers Recognition and Expansion. They say that it will be $5 a month, $4.99, but $5, come on. And the rewards you will get a 500-slot expansion to your inventory. That's huge, let me tell you, right there. There are people that will be willing to pay it just for that alone, because your inventory is so limited in that game, and it's you are limited to 2,000 items. And then you have an additional 5 what they call key lockers, where you can put keys to portals, up to 500 of them in those lockers. 600, I think, actually now. But there's, like, your basic inventory, bursters, and is limited to 2,000. You cannot expand that. So the fact that this is happening is a huge deal. You will also get a special medal, special codename flare, whatever. You get some monthly in-game currency, 2,500, what they call CMUs. And you get a loadout kit, which I assume is going to be, you know, some gear. And then you will will be able to, also on the Intel map, you can go and see your inventory and your portal keys. That's huge for planning big fields. There's going to be some people that will love that for, oh, I've got a key to that, I got a key to that. So it's going to be interesting. $5 a month, that's a lot. But again, I know people that I will probably do it, honestly. I play enough of that game. You know, I probably play almost as much of that as I do something like Final Fantasy 14, and I pay three times as much for Final Fantasy 14. So I'll probably do it. Loki, you probably won't do it because you don't play enough Ingress, right?
I don't play any Ingress, so that's a definite, that's a hard no.
Yeah. ActDeft in chat says, I do wonder if they plan to implement this for Go. I mean, we already pay for events in Pogo. That comment, of course, coming from our chat room. That's exactly why I brought it up. I don't think we have a lot of listeners who even know what Ingress is, but I bet there's a lot of you that do play Pokemon Go. And I just kind of wanted to say, oh, look at this, because this might be what, you know, again, we don't know until they make an official announcement, but it's interesting, isn't it? Here's a game that admittedly I've never played, but always comes up because it was in the release dates once and we couldn't stop laughing. It's Alpaca Ball. Did you know Alpaca Ball All-Stars is a game that's out there right now? Well, you can get a free update to the game if you're somebody that's playing this game right now. It is a Lunar New Year update. So you can actually get in there, and it's a free update that's coming out February 5th, so it's already come out. We'll get a new pitch, and there is a new stage, I guess, called Chinatown that is decked out with decorations to welcome the Lunar New Year. And there is a dragon in there that will toss the soccer ball and the alpacas into the air, just flinging that alpaca. All right. So check that out if you're a fan of Alpaca Ball. Loki, a couple more for us?
All right. So we've got Akira Yamaoka teasing something that he says is going to be announced by the summer. Something that I'm quite sure it will be the one you've been waiting for, he says.
Oh, interesting. Oh, him. He just had a birthday a couple days ago.
Yeah, and so apparently, you know, he was like teasing something. This is part of an interview that he did with AI Hub. And since then, they have pulled the interview by the request of an unspecified party.
Oh, yikes. Okay.
So
The plot thickens.
I guess we'll wait and see
All right. What
that might mean.
All right. But let's not get too excited, but maybe
Yeah. I can think of at least one franchise he's involved with.
Uh-huh. So. All right. And of course, if you're not already aware, Silent Hill is what we're talking about. But let's not set our expectations too high, because that's only going to lead to disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what else?
And then we've got this Bimani piano game, Nostalgia, is now on PC. So you can check that out. It's, I don't know, I guess it's part of the Konami Amusement Game Station platform that they have. So it apparently is also going to support MIDI keyboards as well.
Oh, cool.
And you can play it, of course, like anything else that's on there with a basic basic course subscription of 1,628 yen a month, or about $15.50. And you'll have access to every piece of content in the game. So I am not familiar with this game, but I mean, it looks like Keyboard Mania.
It's come up on the show before, and I think I've seen it. It looks like a lot of fun. Again, I'm kind of waiting to see if they will put out an official, you know, English support translation and, you know, localized support for the game. But I think it's really cool. It's neat that Bimani's still kind of kicking in these different ways. So,
yeah, I'm surprised we haven't heard anything else of, like, because I know that you were doing the alpha test for, like, Dance Dance Revolution, and then right. They had, like, 2DX and all that stuff. I'm wondering.
Well, the pandemic happened, and it's probably come into it.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. But it's yeah, I guess.
For DDR, anyway. All right. Let's travel around the world and check out some release dates and some games that are coming out very soon. I know we at least have one big one in the U.S. this week, right, Loki?
Yeah. So we've got, looks like, Death Crown coming out on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Little Nightmares 2 on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Galgun Returns on PC and Nintendo Switch. Super Mario 3D World plus Bowser's Fury on Nintendo Switch. And then we've got the three that we're releasing this week: Pixel Poops, Pixel Poops 64, and Pixel Poops number 2. PC, Commodore 64, and NES for those.
How convenient that's on the list. I love that.
It's on there. Like, Wikipedia had it, so it must be official.
Is that Mario 3D Worlds this week, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, I missed it. Yes, sorry.
It's on Friday. 3D World plus Bowser's Fury.
All right. I know I'm picking that one up, so excited about that. All right. Yeah. Let's travel over to Japan and check out what's coming out over there. In Japan, of course, Super Mario 3D World and Bowser's Fury also out in Japan this week on the 12th. That's kind of a worldwide release, which I'm sure doesn't surprise anyone. That is out on the Switch. And then a Fate Extella Celebration Box for the Switch is also out on the 11th this week. And those are pretty much your big releases on the Switch. Checking the PlayStation 5, no, there's a third party putting out a headset, but we don't get any new games until next week. We get a new game on PlayStation 5. PlayStation 4 does have that same Fate Extella Celebration Box that I talked about on the Switch. Otherwise, Little Nightmares 2 is coming out over there, so you can check that out. And that's it for Japanese releases. How about the UK, Loki, with Dark Soccer out tonight?
We have Little Nightmares 2 coming out on PlayStation 5 and 4. And it looks like Xbox One and Switch and PC. We've got Evoland on PlayStation 4. Eternum EX on Switch. We have Dex on Switch. And then they're getting also the... Mario Red and Blue Edition Switch bundle and accessories. So that's going to be bundled with that Super Mario 3 World. And we've got Galgun Returns on Nintendo Switch. They're also doing the standalone Super Mario 3D World and Bowser's Fury as well. And that's it.
All right. We've got a few more stories for you guys, and then we're going to get to your questions in our chat room, as well as your emails. We have a couple emails tonight, so we'll get to those shortly. But first, some more stories for you. Loki, this game that just will not leave the news. Every week, it's something.
And you thought mods were problems when they were romancing Keanu Reeves, but now apparently all mods are problems because, come to find out. Look, there's a
in Cyberpunk. Specifically.
Yes, in Cyberpunk. there's a security exploit, apparently, in Cyberpunk when they added mod support. So they're saying, hey, be cautious, because we have been made aware that there is a vulnerability that allows external DLL files in the game, or vulnerability in external DLL files the game uses, which can be used to execute code on PCs. So this is going to be patched ASAP. But for now, be cautious. However, it has been patched as of Friday, so that is good. But just be aware that this stuff kind of pops up once in a while. And it is Cyberpunk, so, I mean, they're still working on it.
Still trying to make sure the game works for everybody.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this news came out this week, and it's disappointing to some individuals, although I have to say it's not incredibly surprising. But Blizzard has basically confirmed that Overwatch 2 and Diablo 4 will not be happening this year, which is interesting because they're doing their own type of like online BlizzCon soon. I think it's in the next couple weeks. I don't remember the exact day, but I think it's coming up real soon. It might even be this week. I just forget. If somebody in chat knows, let me know. This news came out during a earnings call. So they did their fourth quarter 2020 earnings call, and they basically said that Diablo 4 and Overwatch 2 are not going to be happening right now. I think some folks thought that maybe Diablo 4 might make this year, or even maybe Overwatch 2, because it seems to build a lot on Overwatch 1. So it might be a little bit surprising. Again, you know, knowing that Blizzard is headquartered in California, and California's had a lot of the stringent shutdown laws, and the fact that, working from home has probably put some bumps in the road, I'm not incredibly surprised. But it does leave me wondering what Blizzard plans to hype up or what they have coming this year. My concern is it's that Diablo phone game. Although everybody I've heard that's tried it says it's not bad. Like, a lot of people are writing it off because it's a mobile phone game, but it actually is a pretty decent Diablo game. That's what I'm hearing. Again, I want to try it for myself before I really know, because that's coming from fanboys, the fair. But that must be a thing for this year. But again, after what happened a couple BlizzCons ago, with that being the key announcement, I can't believe that that would be their key announcement for this year. Now, we've had the rumors about Diablo 2 getting remastered.
Yeah,
remember that whole
thing
where they picked up the studio back east and everything? So maybe that's the thing they're going to lean on this year. Maybe that's something they can get done a little faster. I don't know. Anyway, I found the dates for the event. It's February 19th and 20th. So it is this month. It's coming up pretty soon. So there you go. That's happening. So we'll see if they decide to give them a better date then. But for right now, in their earnings report, they said, "We are making significant progress against our development pipeline for other key intellectual properties, which we expect to fuel further growth in 2022 and beyond." Well, we'll see. We'll see what they've got. All right. Moving on, Loki, to something we never got.
Yes, so there is a prototype of DuckTales that has been found, and one of the things that was discovered in the game, which is a unused soundtrack, unused song from the game, that was originally supposed to be intended for the map screen, but they cut it out. So that was kind of cool that we get to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this prototype was from, looks like, February 5th, 1989.
Wow. 22 years ago.
Yeah.
No, I can't math today. That would be 32 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty neat that they have that available to hear what might have been. It wasn't as good as some of the other music in the game, but it was still neat to hear it.
Yeah. It's awesome. I love the site that gets all the, you know, prototypes and all the differences and things. It's so neat to see the stuff that changed for whatever reason, and just to kind of theorize, like, why would they have changed this or done this a little differently? And like you said, maybe they just didn't receive the map song as well internally, so they, you know, decided to put a different song in instead. So Dr. Tsuya in chat says over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, "I definitely recommend looking up the alternative Transylvania music. I almost like it more than the one we got." So, you know, art is all in the eye of the beholder. So cool. I'll have to check. I haven't heard the song yet, so I'll have to check it out after the show. So, all right. Well, meanwhile, another story from Loki.
Yep. And then I think we talked a little bit about how Valve is going to be getting the receiving end of a lawsuit regarding patent infringement with their controller. Well, they have now been fined over $4 million for that patent infringement.
Yikes.
This is coming from the, the company was Scuf, I guess, or SCUF, and they're owned now by Corsair. So they apparently, they found that, you know, they did impede on their patent, and now they owe them, you know, that kind of money. I'm kind of surprised, but just kind of sucks for Valve. They can't catch a break with any of the peripherals that they're releasing. But
yeah,
what are you gonna do? At least it's not being produced anymore, so, you know, keep the damages to a minimum.
Well, one thing they could do is show up to court. Although that was a different case, but still.
Yeah.
Still. All right. Ending on a bit of a downer tonight. Sorry, but it should definitely be brought up because fortunately we lost somebody this week who is huge in gaming culture, and that is Robert A. Altman, who is the co-founder and CEO of ZeniMax. Bethesda, in a statement, saying he was a true visionary, friend, and believer in the spirit of people and the power of what they could accomplish together. He was an extraordinary leader and an even better human being. There's a lot of stuff on Twitter, you know, a lot of people talking about, like, their reflections on having met Robert Altman and so forth, and some of the things he kind of did with the company. And so I even know a couple people that work over there, and we're talking about some of the things that he did with the company and so forth. And it's it's sad. And obviously a lot of folks that work there are you know, kind of mourning this. This is I did not catch that there was a reason. Not that it's any of our business, but I know in the year 2021, a lot of people want to know, is it COVID? I don't know. And I don't know how much notice, you know, they had that if he was sick for a while or something like that. But the reality is that unfortunately he's passed away, and now somebody else will become the CEO of Bethesda when the board meets next. So if you do want more information, including there's a nice little letter from his son that is available, twitter.com/Bethesda. And there are some tweets from February 4th when this occurred. So you can check that out. All right. SS100 Matt, bringing it back to a happier note. We'll kind of start our listener roundtable with this because I can't believe I forgot to include this tonight. Meanwhile, the data miners finding the original code for the Super Mario Brothers World Super Mario World soundtrack and folks recreating it in its uncompressed form sounds really cool. Yeah, I wish I'd prepped that to play on the show tonight. Sorry, guys. But check it out on YouTube. I tweeted about it a few days ago. Loki, did you hear these? It was
I did. And it was probably a good thing that we didn't play any of that. You know,
I liked it. It was, oh yeah, you're right. We might get shut down or something. Yeah, you're right. Cease and desist, happy and all that. You're right. So we probably shouldn't play it, but still, I can still tell you to go seek it out on YouTube because I believe it's still up there. So basically what they did, they found the uncompressed samples before they went into the cartridge. And obviously you have to compress stuff down a lot to fit in a 16-bit cartridge, right? So the song sounded one way to us because we heard the compressed audio, but somebody rebuilt the music with the uncompressed audio and it sounds different because it doesn't sound so like tin can, I guess, because it's compressed and it's really different. So you should really check that out. And SSJ100 Matt's giving you a convenient link in the chat there for those that are listening live. For those that are on the podcast, I would just encourage you to go to YouTube and look for, you know, Super Mario Brothers uncompressed, or look for it on Google News because a lot of sites were covering this because it's very much a like, wow, like difference with the sound. I don't know if, yeah, it's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, ActDev points out it's on Discord. Thank you. You're right. Somebody posted a tweet, it wasn't my tweet, it was somebody else's tweet, over in Discord. So a good cheap plug for our Discord if you want to join us over at vognetwork.com, vognetwork.com/Discord. Dr. Tetsuya saying, I saw something similar for the Donkey Kong Country OST. I think I remember seeing that too. That was pretty wild. All right. Before we get to last minute stories or any further questions, let's get to the mailbag. We have a couple of emails tonight, so let's start with another quick one. I think this is from the same one who sent the quick email last week, but this time it's signed, so I can give credit. So here's our first email for tonight. If you want to email us, participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send it. So the email tonight goes, what is the most boring video game you have ever played? And it's signed D from Waterloo, Iowa. I'm laughing because I can't help but think of the ABBA song. Waterloo. I'm sure if you really are from Waterloo, Iowa, you're probably sick as hell of that joke. But I can't help it. It's a good song. It's a pop. All right. Back to the question, though. What is the most boring video game you've ever played?
I don't even know. I'm trying to think of something that's incredibly boring.
I don't know. Get very bored with tactical games, so I'm not going to make a lot of friends with this answer, but I'm going to say Disgaea. Sorry. I just cannot get into those tactical games, try as I might. Except, for some reason, Final Fantasy Tactics, exception to the rule. I can play that, and I love that game. Maybe it's just because I've always been kind of a, you know, Final Fantasy fanboy, and I'm willing to admit that. So maybe I kind of cut that game a break where I didn't a lot of other games, but I could not get into like the really hardcore tactical stuff like Disgaea, or even when it comes to like Advance Wars, I can't get into that either. And so I don't get very excited playing those games, and they don't hold my attention very long. I know that answer is not going to be popular. I'm not saying they're bad games. I'm just saying they're not for me. So Bobby Blackwolf in chat says Desert Bus. DJ Rama S.
I mean, that's the obvious one.
DJ Rama S. says Final Fantasy VIII game was trash. Yeah. Tiger Clown chat says a game can get boring when the action becomes repetitive. That's true, too. What do you think, Loki? Did you think of anything?
No, I mean, typically I'm not playing boring games. Why would I subject myself through all that?
Yeah.
I know there's been things I've subjected myself to. It's when it becomes like a grind that it gets kind of boring. I guess, like, I don't know if I'm like trying to like 100% something, I would think that sometimes it might be boring, but like typically I just don't spend time playing boring games. I don't have enough time as it is. I'm not going to just spend time playing all these boring games. Harry Potter, the Harry Potter game on mobile, the Niantic game, that's pretty boring.
Tiger Claw in chat says the type of games where you only do a single thing the entire game can get boring when there isn't variety. You know, Tiger Claw, I see that, and I know there are games that exhibit that, but I also think that there have been some incredible games that are simple. I think of a game like Kaboom. There's not a lot to it. You catch bombs in the little water wells. That's it. You spin a little, but something about, and like a lot of those older games on the Atari 2600 had incredibly simple themes and could be repetitive, but if it was the right mix, then it actually was a lot of fun. But I will say, and to your credit, Tiger Claw, there were a lot of Atari 2600 games that were also very boring and got old very fast for a very similar reason. In fact, here's another, you know what, is another great answer to this question, in my opinion, if you want to go back to Atari 2600. And again, you're not going to like it, because a lot of people put this game up on a pedestal, and I'm not sure why. Sword Quest. You remember those games? Sword Quest Fire, Sword Quest Earth, Sword Quest. I think they only ever really finished two of them. I'm sorry, they're not that great of games, because they just try to kind of do a lot, and it's excruciatingly hard. And if you don't have the manual, you don't know what the hell you're doing. I get that some people ate that shit up when they were a kid, and, you know, the whole contest around it, and they want to see that fourth game released. I'm sorry, that is a 2600 game I couldn't get into, and I find it to be, quite frankly, a little bit boring. Pod Culture in chat says E.T. That could be two, yeah. As Joan Hunter Matt says, Dynasty Warriors has made a genre out of endlessly hacking and slashing a large group of enemies. See the Zelda, yeah. Gundam, and so forth. You know what, though? But I think that Zelda, the Zelda version, the Hyrule Warriors, was a lot of fun. So, I get that. You know, 99 Nights, it got a little boring. But, I loved the Hyrule Warriors, at least. So there's that. So, anyway, something to think about. And again, I also bring up the whole, like, you know, simple, repetitive thing, because as I was saying at the top of the show, this whole pixel poops thing, you know, as much as you might giggle and laugh at the name and the silly concept, it's actually like the simplicity of it is a lot of fun. And it is a great Atari 2600-esque kind of game. I haven't played Loki's interpretation of it enough yet, but I'm imagining it's going to be a very similar type of thing. Yours is probably going to be more of like a puzzle type of thing. It really sounds you have to poop in the right place.
Not necessarily. I mean, it's just a puzzle. It's not, I hardly call it a puzzle game. I mean, it's like an old arcade game. I mean, that's kind of what it's based on. So like, you know, you just have a simple goal and you have to strategize a little bit, because you don't want to be, because of some of the level design, you have to think about where stuff's going and, you know, try not to get too far away and manage how much, you know, food you have and all that stuff. So there's a little bit of thought into it, but solving puzzles.
I've mentioned this on a show before in Aaron's Atari inspired Pixel Poops. There's like a few things. There's a few twists that you might not expect. Like when the score reaches a certain limit, some other stuff starts happening. And that's very Atari 2600-esque, that like it just instinctively gets harder at a certain point. And I discovered in the game last night, you guys, I didn't know this before. You ready? You ready for a Pixel Poops hot tip? Okay. You ready for this? I did not realize until last night, if you walk through the door, it automatically ports you to that little white line where you refill the tacos. I didn't know that until last night. And maybe I'm not supposed to be saying that, but that's my hot tip. My YouTube tip. Number two will shock you. That is my little tip I learned about the game, and I didn't realize that. And just being able to save like 5 squares of movement by doing that, let me tell you, game changer. All right. Anyhow. YYR's in chat, by the way. I think he missed the plugs in the beginning of the show, but he's here now, and he says, I can vouch for Pixel Poops number 2. It's definitely a different, deeper, and more challenging game than the original. If you buy it, you will find it to be worth your money. So he's saying it's some deep shit. All right. All right, enough plugs. Let's get into one more email here. Thank you, Dee, for the email. Next email, Fabrice from Belgium. We haven't heard from this individual in a very long time. Good to hear from you again, my friend. Hello, everyone. It's been a while since I wrote in, but I'm still loyally listening since 2006. Wow, that's 15 years. Thank you so much for that. I was wondering what you think Sega's place in video game history is and will be. Sega made 4 main consoles, and they are now longer out of hardware than they were in it. Ah, interesting point. So yes, the Dreamcast was discontinued 20 years ago. Also, Sony made 5 main consoles. Microsoft now has 4 too. Although I still think Sega remains legendary, but that's me since I'm a fanboy, the truth is that for a lot of people, the PlayStation 2 or the Xbox 360 was their first console. For them, Sega is just another game company. It feels like the vibe I have about Atari. They were an important video game company, but to me, they don't mean a lot. Well, as always, thank you for making the show. You make the mess we are in now a lot more bearable. Thank you so much for that. Yours truly, Fabrice from Belgium. Thank you for that kind-hearted sentiment at the end there. Let's tackle the question. What do you think Sega's place in gaming history will be? Loki, you want to take this on, or I have an idea?
I mean, Sonic. I don't know. they have a solid library of stuff that they'll be known for.
Right.
And I mean, they're still kind of like, even their philosophy as far as how they treat like fan games, I think, is something that I wish would be adopted by some other companies, like, you know, Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think there's like plenty to remember them by.
Yeah. Some comments in chat. Questbuster says, Sega's iconic and one of the greats. Whatever happens to it now can't take away its impact on game history. I think to find the answer to your question, Fabrice, I think we would have to do something that we do a lot in gaming, and that is look at the parallels in other entertainment venues, namely movies. Let's look at the movie industry, and there are a lot of movies that came out a long time ago from studios and companies that are no longer around. And kind of like you say in the email when you talk about Atari and so forth, there are some movies that people today don't necessarily care about, right? And I mean older movies, old musical. Like, or say The Wizard of Oz. There's some people that'll tell you, I love The Wizard of Oz. I love this movie so much because I used to watch it when I was a kid and it was on TV at Thanksgiving and my family would get together and we'd love The Wizard of Oz. Or replace that with The Sound of Music. That's my favorite musical of all time, even though these things were out, you know, a generation ago, right? So there's some people that look back on it and remember it very fondly, but there's other people that go, those movies are so hard to watch. They look so bad. They're grainy. They're musicals. All the movies that are old are musicals, and I don't like musicals. And, you know, so on and so on. Or, you know, you take another movie, you know, from the past that maybe just doesn't hold up well over time, where it's like it's really hard to look at it through a 2021 lens because culture has shifted so much. So my point is, I think Sega has a place in that part of history where it's like they are what a classic movie studio was, what maybe like an MGM or something was back in the day. You know, that's where Sega holds up. And there's going to be some people till the end of time that are like, I love Sonic. I played Sonic the Hedgehog growing up. Or, you know, my dad made me play Sonic because he played it growing up. And this was, you know, a thing. And I think it'll be a thing that gets brought out once in a while. You know, like, oh, remember this old game that we grew up with? It's funny. Actually, I talked about the classic gaming store visit earlier today, right? When I was there, it was just me in there and a couple of the employees. And at some point, a family came in and they were looking at, they have Nintendo old 8-bit cartridges that are in the glass case. And there was a kid like 6 or 7 years old that was like, that was very fascinated with the cartridges. Like they were something he'd seen in a textbook somewhere or in a movie he was fascinated with. He's like, wow, look at all these old games. Like, look at all these games. And he was very fast. And the dad was there and the mom was there too, although the it was kind of a family of four and the mom kind of went off to another part of the store with a girl. So it was just the dad and the little boy. And the dad was saying, yeah, these are the games that I grew up on. Can you guess which one I like to play a lot? And I remember the girl saying something about like Donkey Kong or something, you know. So they were kind of having a discussion like that. So, I mean, that's, again, you know, even though they don't make Nintendo games NES cartridges anymore, and I wasn't nosy enough to hear whatever the game really was that he played a lot of, it's probably by a company that doesn't really exist in the same way anymore. For all I know, that man said the correct answer, which would be the Guardian Legend. Just kidding. It wasn't in the case. I looked. But, you know, and that's from a company that no longer exists, but it doesn't negate that they made a great piece of art that still holds up. So let me get some more comments from chat. SSU100 Matt says, also, Sega has the most brilliant ad campaign in gaming history. They spent a lot of money and geared the Genesis to teens, which went against Nintendo's family model. SSU100 Matt continues, I think Sega opened the door for a company that can take on the big names like Nintendo, Atari, etc. in their own game. They went the distance, and we enjoyed the ride. Tiger Claw in chat is talking about my parallels there, saying, as much as I like the old movies from my childhood, I don't really go back to watching them again because I've already seen them. When I see a movie, it's about the first time experience of seeing something new. It's hard to go back and watch them again knowing how they begin and end. See, that is so not like me, Tiger Claw. You guys know I've seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show probably 500 times. Easily. In a theater, nonetheless. Not even that. A movie like Clue, easily 100 times. Showgirls, easily 50 times. Those are cult movies, of course, that, you know, that are kind of meant to be watched and rewatched. But even sometimes there's like comfort food for movies. I was just browsing around Peacock on the Xbox. I was like, oh, what did they put on the service? And I was like, oh, Mamma Mia. And I watched Mamma Mia start to finish on Peacock. I didn't even need to watch it. I have the fucking Blu-ray somewhere, but I was just feeling lazy. It's literally right in front of me. Push A to play. Okay. You know, maybe it's in 4K. I don't know. They even fucking put commercials in it, but I was like, whatever. You know, it's kind of like watching a TV. I wasn't like actively watching it. I was kind of playing around on my phone, you know, kind of like it's on in the background. But I also, that movie, as cheesy as it, I admit, is a cheesy, ridiculous movie, but it is so comfort food for me because I love the music. I love ABBA, whatever. It's just, it's a group I grew up with for a long time. So that movie's comfort food for me. And I think, again, that's what Sega games are going to be for a lot of people. Questbuster in chat says, and thank you, Sega, for bringing Valkyria Chronicles 4 over, for taking risks like that for the fans. Mm-hmm. Pod Culture says, I've probably seen Serenity about 20 times in the theater. Dijirama S says, I feel the same way when I watch anime on Funimation, Hulu, and Crunchyroll. Yeah, I have the DVD or Blu-ray, but damn it, it's right there, and I'm going to watch and enjoy it. Thank you. You understand what I mean. And someday, those Sega games are just going to be in the cloud. In fact, many of them already are. Push A to start, you know, and that's the way it's going to be. So that's my long-winded answer to your question, Fabrice. I think Sega, there's always going to be a place for Sega. Sega will always have a corner in any video game history museum. But as far as do people hold it fondly or what, that's just going to depend on their culture. And I'm not talking about like where somebody is. I'm talking about what they're surrounded with, their family's influence, their friends' influence, and all of that. That's what's going to really play into what somebody kind of thinks of Sega. And like you said, you don't really think a lot about Atari. Realize there's going to be some people, you know, especially now that, you know, Sega's been out of the business 20 years. That means somebody could have been born after Sega was out of the business and is now an adult. So you're going to have to get used to the idea that there's going to be some, I can't even say kids, adults, young adults now who are going to be like, oh, I never really played a Sega game because they weren't really around. You know, or, oh, yeah, Sonic. Yeah, I remember the Wii game that had him in it. You know, so it's just going to be a little different. So, all right. Anyway, great question.
You mean that character from Smash Brothers?
Yeah, right? Yeah. So participate at orangeloungeradio.com if you want to send us an email. Actually, one more thought. I'm sorry, Fabrice, one more thought. If you want more people to, you have to educate the future. You have to educate the children about Sega and why you love them so much. So especially in your own family and the people around you. Even if you don't have kids of your own, you probably know somebody with kids and you can sure bring over that, you know, Sega Dreamcast. So anyway, that's my thought. All right. That's it for emails. If you want to send us an email in a future week, participate at orangeloungeradio.com. YYR in chat says, oof, that character from Smash Brothers, that just makes me sad. But you know what? As much as it might make you sad, somebody's going to go, what game is this character from? He looks familiar. What is this? And might actually do some research. There's going to be some people that discover the game because of Smash Brothers. But I get it. It makes you feel old. Believe me, I hear it. All right. Loki, any last minute stories for our audience tonight? While I ask chat if they have any other comments or questions.
Yeah, so there was some leaks coming out about the Sonic 30th anniversary. So this is coming from apparently a credible leaker, a Nintendo leaker, Zippo. And so it's talking about, aside from, you know, the voice cast as Left Sonic, so the voice of Sonic, Roger Craig Smith, Cindy Robinson, the voice of Amy, and Colleen, I can't even pronounce her last name, voice of Tails, all have departed, and they're saying that the rest of the current voice cast will be following them as well.
Wow.
And leaving. Apparently, the Warren Graff and Ken Pontic are no longer writing for the game. And they're saying that the 30th anniversary will be described as a new era for Sonic, that the modern Sonic will focus on the franchise going forward, both in 2D and 3D games. Apparently, Mania was a one-off. And so fans of the classic era should look to fan games for further installments.
Wow.
The next 3D game apparently will be, full 3D games, you know, 3D spin dashing. There's going to be, you know, multiple playable characters. Supposed to be out by holiday, assuming it doesn't get, you know, delayed. And with characters appearing, more guest appearances in other games. And then
I hate to say it, but this sounds like a recipe for disaster. I mean, prove me wrong, but this whole, like, if you want to remember the classic Sonic games, go play fan games. I mean, it's great that Sega embraces that. I'm happy. But at the same time, it's like, remember Sonic 4?
Ooh.
Yeah.
So.
But apparently, though, they're also supposed to be working on a 2D game as well. Someone's working on one of those. So there's a new Sonic collection rumored to be coming out in June. It's going to feature, you know, majority of the classic games. So I guess we'll have to wait and see when any of this stuff gets announced.
All right.
That's pretty much it.
That's it. All right. Well, I guess we're going to wrap up then. I know it's only just after 8, but we don't have Jamie here tonight to get opinions from. But she'll be back next week, assumably.
Oh, I was going
to
say, I don't know if we didn't talk about it, but they have had the preview of, or I don't know if it's sort of open, but the new Super Nintendo World, they've had of all the rides.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what's come out and stuff like that. What have your thoughts been on that? Like, is Mario Kart rides kind of little, not what I was hoping it would be? It looks fun. It looks kind of like a Midway Mania or something like that, but more AR, which is cool. But normally when I think of Mario Kart, I think of much faster than that. And that's not a very fast ride.
The videos never are as good of an experience as the real thing. And, you know, I want to see what it looks like out after the pandemic. and what it looks like in America. Not that those things are necessarily going to suddenly make that ride any different, but they may be holding back on some effects and some things because, you know, they don't want the air to circulate a certain way or what have you. And in Japan, the size of things tends to be a little bit smaller because they don't have as much space to work with. That's what happened with Disney Sea, I think, is actually a relatively small Disney property because they didn't have a lot of space to build with. So I'm just a little curious to see what it looks like. But I mean, again, I could watch those videos and go, I didn't really care for that. And I kind of don't know. But I was like, I just want to see it in person. I just feel like I'm going to give it like I could sit here and go, it didn't look fun at all. Like hell, I'm not going to be going there in the first couple months after it opens to take it all in for myself and get 1,000,000,000,000 selfies for Instagram with everything that's there.
Yeah.
So like, you know, the videos, they're interesting, but let's see what it looks like when the world's back to normal a little bit and what it looks like here in the States. That's my thought. Orange Wright in chat says, yeah, I was thinking it would be a lot faster, but it looks like it's pretty slow. Pixel Paca says, even if Disney Sea is small, it's utterly gorgeous. Oh, yeah. But Disney and all these companies, they are very good at playing optical illusions. Very good with, making your eyes believe certain things that may or may not be true. And I'll kind of leave it at that. But that's part of the Disney magic. That's what makes a company like Disney. And, you know, Universal's very good at theme park stuff, too. That's what makes these companies do well in the theme park business is that, you know, they know what the F they're doing. That's for sure. So,
yeah.
Anything else, Loki?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, let's get final thoughts then. Before we wrap it up, I do want to say thank you guys so much for listening to Orange Lounge Radio this week. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, please tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if the voices aren't here to put out on air, then what can we do? So please tell a friend. A nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes or wherever you found this podcast goes a long way. Auto hosts of VOG Network on Twitch are one of the best things you can do. So thank you. Thank you to those of you that do that. Unfortunately, I don't have a list in front of me, but just know if you're doing that, I really appreciate it. So those go a long way as well. Thank you for being here tonight. I know there's a lot of, you know, big stuff going on in the world. So just appreciate you spending a little extra time with us tonight. Even if you're on the podcast feed, hey, I appreciate you taking the time out to listen to the podcast like Fabrice has since 2006. Really appreciate that. And everybody out there listening, thank you so much. If you want to support us a little extra, you can always check out our store, vognetwork.com/shop. That's vognetwork.com/shop, where you can get yourself an OLR t-shirt or some VOG Network branded merchandise. Check it out. There's some cute little things on there. Check that out. So I think that's it. Now we can get everybody's final thoughts and then we'll be out of here. So Loki, I'll start with you. You got a big week ahead of you.
Yeah. Final just thought. rushing, trying to get stuff done. So yeah.
All right. And my final thought is I have some more project ideas of my own stewing, but I just have to, you know, be able to stick with something. And it's been a little crazy in these pandemic-y times, but I'm hoping there'll be more creative stuff real soon. So anyway, we will see you in 7 days. Happy gaming. Have a wonderful night, everybody. And stay safe out there. We'll see you next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VOGNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.